Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
What's coming up?
I've got a hair appointment. I'm so excited.
But your hair looks fabulous. Oh, well, it looks salon fresh.
Well, do you know what? My husband will be so pleased that you said that because he dyed it with a box dye.
Did he?
That was actually 3 years out of date.
Oh, well, that
We took a risk. It paid off, thank goodness.
It looks lovely.
Oh, thank you.
It's got a lovely kind of honey gold, honey blonde feel to it.
Well, I've got a new hairdresser and I spoke to her. Haven't met her yet, but she sounds really nice and she made me an appointment. She sounds really fun. Mm. I'm hoping she's a Real Housewives fan.
I bet she is. And I have an appointment with a beautician.
Yay!
And it'll be in the second week of April. And she was very excited to have how excited I was when she said she could take appointments.
Yay!
And I've got an appointment for a pedicure.
Woohoo!
And a facial with dermabrasion.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
So I'm going to have the top layer of skin taken off. I will look...
You'll be a new woman.
I will look 3 months younger. And away we go.
Here we are
again. And this episode, this is a good one. This is a fun one.
They're all fun, Gabby.
All fun.
I don't get it when you say that. They're all fun.
No, I say it every time. Yeah.
No, this is a good one. This is a fun one.
It's been fun researching it. Sometimes it's a bit sad researching things. That's what I mean.
Yeah,
and
I know
other
what you
times
mean.
It's fun. Yeah. This one is about mom and pop managers. Momagers and poppagers.
Interesting.
I am Dr. Gabby Malcolm, and I'm a writer and broadcaster, podcaster.
I'm Sarah Musselwhite. I'm a teacher. I'm a tutor. I am a podcaster. I am a Real Housewife
super fan.
And I'm so excited. I mean, I must admit, being a Real Housewives fan, it's hard sometimes to fit everything into my schedule.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, mind you, I could fit new things in, but trouble is, I'm re-watching the season of Orange County with the cancer scam.
So Vicky was with
Brooks and he pretended he had cancer. I mean, that was a gift to Andy Cohen. Season was a gift.
And now Andy Cohen has produced, he's got a new series about the reality of reality TV.
I wish I could be interviewed for that.
Well, I did contact you, Andy Cohen, on Twitter and sent you the link for this podcast because I think you'll love this.
Mm.
And if anyone gets No Wire Hangers, you will, baby.
Yeah, and share it with Anderson Cooper.
Yes, definitely. But it's not maybe suitable for your lovely little boys.
No, they're
not old enough yet.
Not yet.
Okay, momagers and poppagers. And I'm taking case studies. This is not so much the minutiae of any one person's career.
Okay.
It's a kind of like overview of what happened within famous careers when... The people who should have been looking out for their children didn't always do that job.
Well, I noticed some parallels with people in my everyday life.
Yes. They didn't always do a good job of it. And they kind of pushed the limit, pushed the envelope with having a talented child. Mm. We've been here before, but I'm looking at
a couple of
cases and... compare and contrast. And the people that we're going to be looking at, the careers we'll look at, are Lindsay Lohan.
Great.
And her mother, Dina. And father, Michael. And the Kardashians, the Kardashian empire, as it is under Kris Jenner.
Yeah.
And then... The career of Macaulay Culkin.
I'm just thinking, can you imagine Kris Jenner at the school gates?
God, yeah.
I mean, oh God, can you imagine?
Yeah, but she was really ordinary.
Yeah, she was.
In terms of like...
And actually, when the Kardashians were younger.
Yeah, she was. And she's recently been given an interview, I think it was with the New York Times, talking about business, and she was saying up to the age of 40, at which point she and Robert Kardashian divorced, she had never paid a bill in her life. and she'd never managed money,
mm-hmm.
and she had to kind of learn it mm-hmm. really fast to be able to kind of keep her finances together. Because obviously, Beverly Hills, you're in that, or Brentwood, you're in that circuit of friendships, and obviously with Nicole Brown Simpson and everything. But she didn't know how to operate, you know, as a business person. So, but we start with Lindsay Lohan. And it's a career kind of examination. We'll shift very quickly to her mother. An interesting thing, I saw Oprah interviewing Lindsay Lohan when she was sort of like partly through rehab in the kind of after her notorious kind of wild child ways and all this that obviously she shared partly with Britney, which we covered in the last episode. And Oprah actually kind of like said something quite interesting and showed some real true compassion when she said to Lindsay Lohan, kind of, you know, you were really driven in your career, and quite rightly, because you were so talented from being so young.
Yeah.
And she was disgustingly talented.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Let's get that straight. That she was really talented. She said, but then you left home at 18 and you had no advice or supervision, did you? And she said, no. And she said, and you had all the money in the world.
Yeah.
All the fame and attention and no real supervision, but she had sort of like left to pursue her career at 18. She'd obviously already had a career since she was about the age of 10, again, like Britney. Dina, her mother, and her father, Michael, had by that time separated, and there were three other children, Michael Jr., Ali, a sister, and Dakota, a brother known as Cody, who's very young. But what we're going to focus on is the parental management and mismanagement, not necessarily Lohan's career and her thing, but we'll talk about where she is today. Very interesting. Living Lohan, I don't know if you remember
that. Yeah, of course, Gabby.
Of course you do.
Come on.
Well, it came out in 2000 and there was only 9 episodes.
Gosh.
9 little precious nuggets.
Gosh,
which
I remember
show
that.
Dina's parenting.
Yeah.
Or non-parenting. And it's a very, very interesting. You can find them on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can find the kind of archive of episodes. So we're talking, this is, you know, 12, 13 years ago. The focus of those 8 or 9 episodes, as it turned out, was to try to be on Ali, Lindsay's younger sister.
Yes.
And she was about 14 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Dina's kind of drive to have Ali establish a singing career.
Yes.
At 14. Now, again, like Lindsay, who had something of a singing career alongside acting, Ali has a very good voice.
Yeah.
She's no Britney Spears.
No.
But this was this kind of off the back of Britney and all of those, you know, Christina, Britney.
Yeah.
And it was to try and kind of, you know, but in a way, Ali Lohan is to Lindsay what Ashley Simpson was to Jessica, the younger sister who had long dark hair as opposed to long red or blonde hair.
Yeah.
It was that thing. It's like you're the slightly, you know, slightly lesser known younger sister.
Yeah.
So We're in that, and this was the focus of Dina. And it's really interesting to watch a couple of these episodes unfold with Dina trying to work with the music producers and the recording studio. The recording studio, you're going to like this one, was owned by the Maloof Company of Las Vegas. Tell us who they are.
Okay, so Adrienne Maloof is one of the OGs of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She's got 3 brothers. They owned, at the time when Adrienne was on The Real Housewives, they owned the Sacramento Kings basketball team. They owned the Palms in Vegas.
Yeah.
I think it was their father that built up the empire. Yeah. So they are very much, they've been born into extreme wealth. Adrienne was married to Paul, who is on the series Botched.
Of bad plastic surgery. Yes. So it's really interesting that there's faxes. This was in the days of faxes. Faxes coming through from the Maloof company at the Palms because of the use of their recording suite. This is where Ali was going to go to record her first album.
Okay.
And it's really interesting because there's like state-of-the-art recording facilities. It's where all the big names were doing their recording. It was, you know, obviously like... And you've got an in with them. You know, you have got an in with that company, with the record company, with everything. The songs are being lined up. Ali is being given these great tracks from a producer who then went on to date Lindsay. And it was all like really, really absolutely current. She was being allowed to pick songs and saying what she listens to, what her friends listen to, and give approval. And in amongst it all is Dina managing her. And it's really interesting because, of course, Jeremy, the producer, knows what he's talking about.
Yes.
The company, you know...
It's a reputable company.
It's a reputable company. The Palms are faxing her. They're on the phone to her saying when you're going to come over and this, that, and 2 weeks from now. And Dina is just making problems.
Oh.
She is just consistently making problems and unwilling to compromise and listen to professionals in the industry. And she's got hair and makeup and nails done perfectly. And she's going around in her mansion in Long Island.
Yeah.
And she's with her younger son, Cody, and with Ali. And they're bickering and fighting like kids. And she's sort of performing for the cameras, kind of showing off, being a crazy Harris single mom.
Oh, yes.
And but just sabotaging her daughter's burgeoning singing career as she goes. It's so mad because she's playing up for the cameras.
Yeah.
She's trying to get that whole, the whole sort of keeping up with the Kardashians thing, the whole Osborne family, MTV.
The crazy mom.
Crazy thing of juggling careers. And she's sort of saying, you know, and Jeremy, the producer, comes along to visit and she's saying about wanting to manage him as well. But she's just got so much. And I just, he just looks kind of like, whoa, you know, it's like the first time I feel sorry for like a hipster looking young music producer. You think, you know, usually you're the kind of, but it's really interesting that her concerns are utterly with the tabloids and the magazines. Every morning she's sitting there at the kitchen table and looking at them all and kind of ignoring her daughter, but flicking through the magazines to see where she's mentioned, where Lindsay's mentioned, where any of her children are mentioned, or her husband, who is also at that time was leading a very off the rails life.
Yes, yes.
So her concerns are totally with this, the thrill for her of living through her talented children.
Yes.
She has zero talent. And this is something that we'll come back to.
Yeah.
Zero talent. If we think back to Britney's parents.
Yeah.
They're not the talented ones.
No.
And they're trying to push this and it's the goose that lays the golden egg.
Yes.
Now, Lindsay, by this time, has reached her maturity, left home, running her own career.
Yes.
So Dina no longer has her little cash cow.
So she needs the
next one. So she needs Ali to come through.
Yeah.
But she wants control and she's doing it in this way that I'm your, you don't want people telling you what to do. You want to be able to choose. I don't want my daughter having some lousy track that, you know, is going to be really embarrassing for her and all this. And she's trying to pull strings about the sort of aesthetic choices over the music.
Okay.
And of course she's, you know, she's a grown woman with children. It's like she's not listening to the professionals in the industry.
And it doesn't sound like with her parenting that she equipped Lindsay very well.
Oh God,
for
dealing. Oh my God.
No, for dealing with the real world.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking, you know, this is one of those programs where, like loads of other crazy families, the little dog is pooping on the carpet.
Oh,
you know, they always show that with the expensive carpet and the little dog, that they're neglecting everybody, their children and their dogs. You know, MTV and, you know, all of these companies are sneaky in the way they produce these shows.
Yeah.
Because they're showing up the families in these little ways. Dina Lohan, Michael Lohan and Lindsay Lohan, all at different times, all arrested for alcohol-related domestic violence and assault charges and drunk driving traffic violations, yeah, things like this. So if you have three family members,
yeah,
you know, where you can all, you can Google all of their mugshots,
yeah,
you know, in lineups, then you have to question the parenting decisions, yeah. Yeah. And the ongoing parenting decisions about that. Dean is very interesting because she's been on things like Dr. Phil recently,
oh, yes,
about 2 or 3 years ago, where she was, everybody accused her of clearly being drunk on camera,
mm-hmm,
and sort of like touching Dr. Phil's knee. And, you know, I mean, if you, you know, Dr. Phil is a big enough scammer and fraud as it is. But, you know, it's interesting, actually. Dr. Phil tried to do an intervention for Britney and was,
yes,
taking his production, yeah, crew to the, yeah, hospital, yeah, when she was, yeah, when she was laid up under the psychiatric hold. But, mm, they said, you're not going near her.
No.
Yeah. Because it's all about that kind of, like, where can I get the juiciest tattletale? So, you know, she gave Dr. Phil plenty of juicy tattletale.
Oh, I can imagine.
And so she has that rather kind of car crash,
mm,
quality.
Well, because she's somebody that I'm assuming hasn't grown up with money, has had a bit of a taste of money from her daughter Lindsay.
Yes.
And she's thirsty for more.
A thirsty bitch. She's she a is. Thirsty, thirsty,
yeah,
bitch.
Yeah. You got a little taste of it. You,
yeah,
want a bit more. You've had a little bit of a mixing with some celebrities. You get addicted to that life.
And you can
says
really,
she, and, yeah, I'm not speaking from experience,
no,
here.
But you can really see that. It's really clear.
Yeah.
You know, that is the clarity. And it's almost like it's been within their grasp, but then it's about to be ripped out,
yes,
of their grasp,
yeah,
and then if it does get taken away from your grasp, as it now has been taken from Dina,
it's a bit like me with a plate of chips and salsa.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's
exactly
taken out of my grasp, I can't cope. It's like, God,
you're clawing at the curtains,
yeah,
and it has been that way for quite some time, I think, for Dina, that she's been kind of clawing at the curtains,
mm,
and knocking, mm, on the door, mm, to be let back, mm, in,
yeah,
of her daughter's careers,
yeah,
now. This is interesting. The twist in the tale,
ooh,
is whilst Dina and Michael, for the longest time, were trying to control and direct first Lindsay's career, then Ali's career, what is obvious is that even with these very talented children, they made awful decisions about how to help them coordinate their careers.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't make good decisions.
No.
You know, they didn't listen to the professionals,
yeah,
to the people. So, of course, you know, their daughters, as Lindsay was given responsibility of keeping the family.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
yeah,
at sort of age 10. And
yeah,
then
for, it's Kim Richards, yeah, all over, oh, again.
Oh, totally. It is. It is those things. But it's interesting to see the mothers, the parents that succeed and the ones that fail. Now, you'll be quite interested to hear this, Lindsay and Ali are the absolute best of friends.
Okay.
That no matter how much their mother did to,
yeah,
both of them, she didn't drive them apart.
Okay, that's good.
They are in touch with their mother.
Okay.
But kind of at a distance.
Okay.
And particularly now, they are in Dubai.
Are they?
Yes. Lindsay Lohan has been living in Dubai for about the last 4 or 5 years.
Because I know she was spending a lot of time on Mykonos.
Yes.
Clubbing on Mykonos.
That's the Lindsay Lohan Beach Club brand.
Oh, okay.
So she
that's
has
a
brand of resorts,
okay,
called Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club. They did a very short-lived season on MTV, a reality show.
Okay.
A little bit like the Vanderpump's Rules thing.
Yeah.
Of the
yeah,
team that run the Mykonos Beach Club.
Yeah.
So they were doing that. But, of course, with the pandemic, it's not been,
no,
it's
no,
not been renewed.
No.
And Lindsay had been planning to come back to America temporarily from Dubai with Ali to shoot a movie, to sort of like, she's now Ali's manager. And they're,
okay,
both looking for projects to do and things to produce,
mm,
and things to possibly return to acting in. Lindsay doesn't want to go back to acting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she said that she'll sort of dip in. She's often on the Virgin Media Dubai radio,
oh,
station with the local DJs. And they've been there together in lockdown.
That's nice.
It's very ironic, because given all of her freedom and kind of notoriety early on, she said that she went to Dubai looking for solace. And she said that she would rather be there because of the way in which you're very cut off from the media. And so she can follow her creative and business interests now with her sister.
Okay.
And she says that the female activism in the Emirates helps her. I don't know how much of it there is.
I wasn't aware of that.
But also, given her notoriety and wild ways, she is now inspired by Islam and a quieter life. She hasn't converted, but she has admitted to reading the Quran for spiritual guidance and inspiration. She's a very spiritual person, Sarah.
Okay.
Lindsay's a very spiritual person.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I can see, I mean, you know, there are restrictions on women there.
I think also it helps with her sobriety.
Well, definitely. You know, in a place where alcohol isn't legal.
Yeah.
You know, and when you are in a hotel and you can have it, it's extremely expensive.
Yes. So I think it helps her in all those ways.
Yes.
And being with her sister and having to be in lockdown with her sister, they're doing ever so well. She's been interviewed on Zoom for various different things. I was looking at some of the interviews and she sounds really well and sober.
That's good. And she's away from her mother.
And she's away from her mother. She's 34 now.
Right.
Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
And she's away from her mother.
Interesting.
It is very interesting. And the characteristic that crops up is just how badly Dina, just how bad she was at trying to manage a career of a talented child.
Yeah.
That it's almost like the kind of tension, the sort of desires and the decisions were sort of too much for her to help either of her daughters achieve the success that really, you know, they deserved. Because they're both really talented
talented. I mean, I'm really glad that she's managed to get away. I'm really glad that she's managed to get past, you know, the arrest.
Yeah.
And to find some inner peace.
Yeah.
I mean, she deserves it.
Absolutely. I have to say, you know, and when people were saying, when in the interviews with her, they're talking to her about her movies, about Parent Trap, about Mean Girls. They're just saying it's iconic films.
Yes.
And they're raving at her.
Yeah.
And one of the presenters for this Dubai radio said, "You were so talented. You were disgustingly talented when you were so young."
Yes.
And she's like, "Oh, thank you so much." You know, and she loved doing it.
That's
good. You know, she loved doing it, she said. But then the sort of, like she said, as Oprah recognised, you had no guidance.
No.
You had no proper management.
No.
You had no supervision because it had been in the hands of her parents who were so desperate for their slice of not just the money, but the fame for themselves.
Yeah, of course.
And you can see Dina trying to upstage her daughters. And it's like, don't try and upstage your talented daughters.
Sad.
You know.
Sad.
So we move on to case number two. Kris Jenner is now 65.
Is she?
She is. She's 65.
Gosh.
And she's probably, arguably, the most successful mumager.
I would agree. I would say that she coined the phrase.
Yeah.
You know, she is.
And even now with the Keeping Up with the Kardashians being wound up, they're not going to make any more.
Yeah.
They've all kind of moved on. They've moved on to other things.
Yes.
And they are absolutely in clover. There's no, none of them have to work a day in their lives.
I mean, let's face it, she's come out of that at the right time. It's best to come out when you're on top. She has been hugely successful.
Well, it started in 2007.
Yes.
And the imitators of it, you know, including the Living Lohan, or the, you know, the imitators that immediately tried to step up, but have not been anywhere like as long-lived as this series. And as she said recently, just in the last couple of days in an interview, at 40, newly divorced, Kris Jenner didn't know how to manage money.
No.
Wasn't a businesswoman. She was saying, I'd been looked after. My husband had paid all the bills. I didn't know how to balance the checkbook.
Yeah.
And I had to get going from scratch with it. So it was Kim Kardashian's friendship with Paris Hilton, yes, as her sort of assistant.
Yes.
That led to Kim becoming a model, but then very quickly going into the kind of scandal side, yes, of things.
Yes.
Getting involved in kind of tabloid scandals, yes, with her release of her sex tape.
Yes.
After Paris had,
yes,
already,
yeah,
you know, paved the way.
Yes, yes,
well,
yes,
her boyfriend had done, yeah, that, you know, to her in a sense. And it led to Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And it's very much the sort of second wave in Kris Jenner's life.
Absolutely.
That from those, absolutely, years of having to make a go of it and seeing how her... I mean, it wasn't evident that your children were going to be famous.
No.
Because unlike the other children we've discussed, the Kardashian offspring have no talent.
And also the majority, I mean, not the younger two, but the older four of them, they weren't children when Keeping Up the Kardashians.
Well, exactly,
started.
They were already, yes, yeah, they'd had a sex
childhood.
Tape. They'd had
a childhood, and I think, you know, they had a good childhood.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
You know, none of them, yeah, are. I mean, I know their father died.
But they hadn't had the exposure to the public scrutiny.
No, they hadn't.
Whereas Kendall and Kylie have grown up.
Yeah,
you know,
they
her
have.
Children with Bruce Jenner,
yes,
as was,
yes,
now Caitlin, have grown up in that way, in that world. What's interesting, in Interview magazine, a feature about Kris Jenner calls her the 21st century's preeminent pop cultural brand builder.
I agree. I agree. I have the most respect for her.
Huge respect.
I really, yes, do. I really admire her. I think she's a great mum. I really do.
And it's almost like she's in that kind of realm, like someone like Simon Cowell. That, you know, it's almost like the kind of ideas machine,
yes,
that they are.
Yes.
Even though they don't have any inherent sort of ability, talent, showbiz quality themselves, you know. Because when Kris Jenner tried to have a chat show, it wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't.
She's
not
a good listener.
No. But I think when Keeping Up the Kardashians was first promoted, it was promoted as, you know, the crazy girls, the you know, the crazy mum and the conservative dad. And, you know, Bruce Jenner was famous.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
He was way more famous than her.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was a household name.
Of course.
For years.
Of course. Yeah. He was, you know, he was America's Daily Thompson.
Absolutely.
I'm showing my age.
Yes, yeah, totally.
I really do admire her.
The reason why I'm sort of like, you know, I'm doing a compare and contrast, you know, I'm doing kind of these three case studies, because I think in a way, Kris Jenner's approach, unlike that of the other mothers, I think there are certain factors in it that she had going for her and her family. One of the things that she says, it's really interesting, in her memoir, she wrote a memoir, Kris Jenner and All Things Kardashian, she described it this way: I started to look at our careers like pieces on a chessboard. Every day I woke up and walked into my office and asked myself, what more do you need to make today? It was very calculated. My business decisions and strategies were very intentional, definite, and planned to the nth degree. So even if she's maybe saying that with hindsight,
yeah,
maybe it wasn't quite so planned, but it was certainly, there was a plan, there was organisation. She,
yeah,
was a sober person.
Yes.
She didn't go down the route of the kind of pills and booze.
No.
Like
and I
Dina.
Think it also, the difference with Dina is that Kris Jenner was used to a certain amount of wealth. I'm not,
yes,
they weren't like mega
no,
minted,
no,
at
but,
the start, but they,
yes,
they lived in an affluent area.
Yeah.
You know, her ex-husband was the lawyer for O.J. Simpson.
Exactly.
I'm,
yeah,
sure he got paid a lot of money.
You know, Kris, Bruce Jenner was a, you know,
yes,
he'd have,
yeah,
been
a
yeah, man with a fortune in his,
exactly,
own right.
Exactly. So
now
she,
woman.
Yes. So she was used to a certain amount of money. Mm. She was used to a certain standard of living. It wasn't like, you know, Britney's mum, who came from a working class, very tough background, who was desperate for the money.
Yeah.
Kris Jenner wasn't desperate for the money.
And Dina and Michael Lohan were not in show business.
No.
They were not in that kind of...
No.
And they kind of had to transplant themselves, like the Spears family, into that world.
Yes. And I think that does help if you're used to living a certain way.
And she had the connections in... television, you know, it's all that. So it's, in a way, it's like the business side of it is keep the show going, keep the interest flowing, and obviously all of her children kind of came on board with
her.
And like you say, she parented them very well.
She did.
She did.
And I think when Keeping Up with the Kardashians started, her and Kourtney ran a little boutique together.
That's right, Dash.
And they had their boutique, and it was really, in the beginning, it was Kim the one who was making the money.
Absolutely, and she was the famous one, and the others and were kind of made to feel like they were the sort of ugly ducklings, a little bit.
But Kris has sorted that out.
Yeah, totally, yeah. And of course, now Kendall and Kylie are just stratospheric.
Absolutely.
But I think the thing to remember, and the point that I want, that the sort of thread that I want to go through is, relative to the industry in which they're moving, what their abilities are and what their talents are. And I think that is one of the things that makes the difference.
Okay.
So the third case is Macaulay Culkin.
Oh, Home Alone.
Home Alone, who now goes by Mac Culkin. Yes, Sarah's just done the face, the screen face of Home Alone. You look more the age of Macaulay Culkin as he was in Home Alone than he is now, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you look like the 10-year-old child compared to... No, I'm just saying that he's worn reasonably well, should we say. That's what I'm trying to say.
Has he?
Well, I saw... there was an interview with him last year in 2020 throughout the sort of lockdown, where he kind of came out of lockdown from his apartment in New York and did a shoot for, I think it was Vanity Fair, and gave an interview. And it's a really interesting reflection. It's kind of like... he doesn't necessarily have great wit and wisdom to impart, but... I think, like Lindsay Lohan, he is, and unlike Britney Spears, he has come out of the other side of it.
Well, they're survivors, aren't they, really?
Exactly,
they
which
are.
Is what I think, you know, where Britney is desperate to extricate herself.
Yeah.
Because, interestingly, Macaulay Culkin is now 40. He was born in 1980, so he's in the same age range as Britney.
Yeah,
it was his parents, Kit and Patricia...
Mm.
who decided to quit their jobs and oversee his career after the initial success of Home Alone in 1990.
Okay.
So that was the sort of catalyst. Kit, his father, had been or was trying to be an actor.
Oh.
And hadn't...
Oh. Hadn't failed. He failed.
Yeah. I mean, he hadn't really sort of got very far with his career, but far enough... to be able to kind of guide his son initially and, you know, to be able to say of, you know, about that kind of whole thing of, you know, this is the way to be, son, you know, get him into auditions, that kind of thing enough. But it was Macaulay Culkin, again, disgustingly talented, you know,
absolutely.
As a young child.
Yes. I don't think nobody could argue with
that. No, and he talks about, in the interview that he gave, he talks about how much he really enjoyed it.
Okay, that's good.
He really enjoyed it, like Lindsay Lohan. At the age of 9, at the age of 10, a little bit further along, he really enjoyed it. And he was kind of going with the sort of whole, you know... the whole sort of like showbiz thing, and he said, you know, getting to meet people and work with these really great actors, you know, and really learn a lot, and he was really into it. But he said, because Kit and Patricia, who were never actually married,
okay,
even though they had, you know, they had a family together and everything, but they'd never actually been legally married, were managing and controlling his career.
Okay.
Very much they were controlling his career, particularly his father. And what happened with like the sort of like other films with Home Alone 2 mm-hmm. and My Girl mm-hmm. is that his father, for example, forbade Macaulay from doing any publicity and doing interviews for those films.
Oh, why was that?
There's no real explanation for it other than he just wanted to control his son's career.
Okay.
So he again, like Dina Lohan, he sort of put obstacles in the way of production companies and other people.
I'm just trying to think why. Perhaps he thought that maybe for the next film he would get paid more if he is slightly elusive.
Yeah, I think so. He was on... he found... jumping ahead a little bit... By the time he was about 15, Macaulay Culkin discovered how much he was worth.
Yeah.
He found out that he was worth about $50 million.
Whoa.
Out of which his parents, his father, was taking 15%.
Right.
And he was not getting on with his father because he says that Kit was very demanding and was physically and mentally abusive to him. He's really upfront about that. He'd much rather be... He's Mac now. He doesn't go by Macaulay. Both he and Kieran Culkin, his younger brother, who had a career, again, both very good actors, were controlled and treated like that by Kit. He didn't want to make any movies after My Girl.
Right.
By the time he was about 12, he said he just wanted to go back to school.
Yeah.
He wanted to go back to school. He wanted to have a normal childhood and just... But his father said no. His father pushed him.
Oh.
And he said, absolutely not. And that's why he said, if you look at me on screen in Richie Rich, the film he made about, you know, the little kind of millionaire kid, he says, I'm miserable. So if you look at him in Home Alone, he says, I'm having a whale of a time.
Yeah, he's loving life.
But then within about 3 or 4 years, he says, I hated it. You see, I hated being on set. I didn't want to do it anymore. So that's why he took the measure that he did, which, God love her, if only Britney had done this.
Yes.
He started in 1994 proceedings for his emancipation.
Wow.
Because his parents had separated and whilst never married were pursuing separate custody proceedings to get the children.
Oh, God.
So particularly to get Kieran and Macaulay in their custody so that they would be able to get the 15%.
Mm.
So this is where the fight between his parents over who was going to have whom, he decided then by the time he was 16 to be emancipated from them.
Wow.
He said it wasn't custodial emancipation that many people think, oh, he's divorcing his parents.
Yes, yeah.
He said it wasn't that. It was all about the finances.
Okay.
He went and got the custodial financial help from the court to have a professional put in charge of his finances. So he achieved what poor Britney didn't.
Yes,
he got an independent executor on board to be able to manage his fortune so that his squabbling, greedy parents couldn't get hold of it.
Wow.
And it also gave him the opportunity to extricate himself from his career and try to go and get an education and try to kind of be, you know, have some sort of childhood. Yeah. And, you know, all credit to him.
Yeah.
But then he went into his party animal phase and went off the rails with the drugs and the drink and everything.
Yeah,
he admits that fully.
Yeah.
He still smokes like a chimney, and much to his assistant and his girlfriend's, you know, concerns. He smokes very heavily, and he also drinks beer, he drinks wine. He loves food, he says. He's not ashamed of his little pot belly. And he loves his cats.
Oh.
Now, as someone, a 40-year-old, living a good life in New York, he said, I've got a great place to live. He says, I've got my lovely animals. I enjoy a glass of wine. And I love to spend time with my woman.
Oh.
And he is with the gorgeous actress and comedian and producer, Brenda Song. They have a production company together and they do various projects. He runs his sort of satirical website.
Okay.
That is like, it's called bunnyears.com or something. And it's okay. Like him. And he's trying to be kind of sharp and funny and everything, but just kind of live his life.
Wow.
And his Instagram is interesting. It's mostly about his cats.
I was going to say, is he on Instagram?
He's on Instagram and he Instagrams with Brenda, with his cats, with, you know... they've both grown up in show business. Brenda Song was in various series and she's the star of recently, the star of Dollface and Secret Obsession. So her career is just on the rise. What's really, really interesting is John Hughes, the late director John Hughes, great man. Obviously, some of his films have a little bit of a problematic thing now, but all in all, John Hughes is someone I think to be admired. And he actually conceived Home Alone for Macaulay Culkin. When he first saw him on screen and he saw him peeping through a letterbox and he said, I had an idea and I decided to base it on you of a kid defending his home. So John Hughes, obviously famous for his teen movies and the comedies and everything, throughout the 80s and 90s.
Yes, I'm sorry, I've just found him on Instagram.
Yeah,
there's him on the cover of Esquire.
Yes,
magazine.
That was it, the Esquire interview.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's got a certain kind of charm still and he's got that kind of whole quirky nature going now.
Yeah, good
and
for him.
It's a really great thing for him to be with this girlfriend and be concerned about certain activism and animals, you know, things like that. What comes across is that John Hughes, the director, actually became one of the father figures that Culkin really craved. And it is really quite touching to sort of like look at that relationship that, you know, John Hughes kind of knew how to give young actors a place on screen, really could write really well for young performers. And Macaulay Culkin has said he was just great and he was, you know, he was great to work with and that was the fun of it.
I'm glad he's had some good male role models.
Yes. A slightly more iffy male role model.
Okay, sorry, too soon.
No, this isn't the car crash that it could have been.
Okay.
When he wanted to leave acting and go to school, and when he was in his early teens and wasn't allowed to, that was the time that he became good friends with Michael Jackson. And a little bit like Elizabeth Taylor.
Right.
They became friends.
Okay.
And he has said categorically that Jackson never tried anything inappropriate with him.
Okay.
But that's not to say he doesn't believe the accusers now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He says that Michael Jackson was his friend and they hung out together. And he said it was almost like having a school friend to mess around with. They used to do prank phone calls and hang out and watch movies. And of course, everybody's suspicions aroused now. But I think because Macaulay Culkin was as big a star as Michael Jackson, like Elizabeth Taylor, there was nothing. Michael Jackson knew how to pick his victims.
Yeah.
That's the thing to remember.
You go for an unknown from a poor background.
Yeah, you go for the vulnerable
kid. He'll take
the
money to be quiet.
And so that's why I think that happened. So he has good memories of Michael Jackson and his godfather to Paris is, and he's still in touch with her. He's, you know, they've got a good friendship. So in a way, he's sort of scarily healthy if not kind of like sort of somebody who is kind of recovering from addiction to certain things, but still drinks a bit.
Yeah, it feels like he is recovering from it.
Yeah.
And isn't that sad? He's a child star who's recovering from being a child star.
And the way that Lindsay Lohan is. And this is where I come to my theory. The parents of talented children, the children who have that remarkable gift.
Yes.
And that might be Michael Jackson when he was 10, Judy Garland, Lindsay Lohan,
Britney Spears,
Macaulay Culkin. They have had serious issues as they grew up. These really talented people, ongoing legal battles, if they've lived, if they've survived, they've had legal battles over, you know, difficulties they've faced. The Kardashians, on the other hand, are a brand.
They are, and as I say, the majority of them, they were adults when they found fame.
Yeah, and
that
even,
makes a difference. Yeah.
And even when the two younger children have entered that marketplace.
Yes,
they've had their individual struggles and obviously failed marriages, difficult issues, but they are all relatively stable.
They are.
Yeah. And I think it is a lot to do with the insecurity and the jealousy that comes with children who are talented and whose parents don't share that. Kris Jenner, her daughters are like her. They're great businesswomen.
Yes.
They find an angle.
Yes.
They can promote themselves. They can
build
the brand.
Kris Jenner allowed her children to have a childhood.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I know we say about Kendall and Kylie. They were, sort of like 10 and 12 when
they
it started?
But they weren't tiny. No, they were still little girls.
They were little girls. Yeah. But they've got their older sisters. They've got their mum who have steered them in the right direction. And I also stand by what I say, that because Kris Jenner didn't come from a very poor background.
Exactly,
she had a certain standard of living already.
Yeah.
So it wasn't all... I know there's different levels of wealth, but she wasn't from poverty when this took off.
And I think
makes a difference.
And I think the background of not having succeeded, perhaps yourself, like Kit Culkin, and then having very talented children... On the one hand, you're quite jealous.
Yes.
On the other hand, you understand how precarious it is.
Yes.
That the next job is all about the next job, the next job, the next hit song, the next thing. And there's a sort of tension around that, which isn't there with somebody like the Kardashians.
Absolutely.
And a reality series and modelling deals and promotion and things like that. It relies too much on, is my child up to this? Is their ability still there? Are they capable of hitting that note?
Yes.
Are they able to do this?
I think also there's the parents that are pushing their children. They are the ones who are judging, that they want to be judged as being successful, good parents.
Yes.
Whereas Kris Jenner didn't have that. She was already successful in her own right.
And
the girls were grown up.
And if you've achieved certain things by the age of 40...
You know,
and
she's
then
lived through the bloody O.J. Simpson trial. She's seen her friend be murdered. You know, it puts things in perspective.
It does. And also, I think it's that thing of, like, there are more guarantees... in terms of the sort of reality showbiz, almost being kind of aristocracy in a way, that you get by on your name rather than on your latest hit or whether that film bombed or was successful. So there's that thing of push, 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 which Kris Jenner was pushy, but she wasn't pushy to the extent that you carry on acting, Macaulay, and you don't go to school, and you do this. Even though you're miserable, you don't get the same kind of sense of that pressure.
No, and I know, I'm not saying the Kardashians are the brain of Britain, but they have graduated high school.
Exactly. They've been allowed
to graduate.
And so the whole difference in that thing, and I think it comes down to that sense of fear and tension that accompanies a child who has a great gift, a singing talent, as to, like, how long will this last? I must milk it for all it's worth and deny them a stable home life compared to somebody who, yes, they're from privilege, the Kardashians, but they could offer a degree of stability.
Yeah.
You know.
So...
The takeaway is...
Give your child a childhood.
Give them a childhood. And I think that don't try and fake it through your children and live vicariously through them.
Don't fake it through your children.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.